Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. I am so happy to be here, and I have a beautiful guest. We've already chatted a little bit. Of course, you know me as StarsCast, also known as Natalie on the internet, and I was just telling my guests since 1998, actually before that, because I used to work for America Online, I was StarsCast then, so I've been around a really long time. Anyways, I want to tell you what's going on in the magazine. I will be sending out notices, looks like tomorrow. I always do it around the 20th, to people for Mystic Living Today to do send me their work, excerpts, poetry. I can do book reviews if you send me a PDF of it. I have somebody who will do that. Lots of good things. It's just totally wonderful. And that'll be coming up. It'll come up on the 1st. Of the month. It goes up automatically. So usually it takes me quite a few days. So if you send me something, like say you forget and I don't send you a reminder, even if it's the day before, I will still put it in. I burn the midnight candle. I work until it's all in. That's my style. That's what I've always done. So don't panic. There's always time to send it to me. And you send it to StarsCast at mysticlivingtoday.com. Be sure to have a link back to your website and make sure you include an image. It could be of the book. It can be of yourself. It can be of both. I'll put them both in. I'll put one at the top. I put one at the bottom. And then I send you the link so that you can check it before it goes live on the 1st. I mean, I've been doing this 10 years, so lots of longevity here, I would say. And the other thing is Star Psychics, that starts with a Z, that you heard my friend Kim do the commercial on. I have new rates, more cost-effective for everybody. Yeah, first-time rates are there. They are reasonable. And when you buy a second reading, the most you're going to pay is $2 a minute, which is extremely reasonable compared to all the other sites out there that have, you know, $4.99 a minute, $10.99 a minute. Somebody's charging like $25 a minute. I mean, that's an awful lot of money, so think twice before you do that. Doesn't mean that they're that great. And after all, they should be giving you good advice. Like on my site, you'll get good advice, good direction. I am always available for private readings. I don't go on the site and have myself listed as live because I'm forever doing things. I have ads going. I'm putting us in places, and so it's hard to shift gears when you do too many things. So, you just email me. There's a link there in my bio, and I'll be happy to schedule something with you. I can do astrology. I can do lunar forecasts. Those are monthly forecasts. I can do yearly forecasts. I can do with my cards, my regular playing cards, and hopefully I have my Stars Tarot deck ready to go soon. And my charms. I have charms that I also use in my readings. So there's lots of things there that I can do. But I do promote all my other advisors. I like to call them advisors because if you will recall, years ago, psychics, quote unquote, got a bad rap. They really, really did. It was the days of, keep them on the phone, get people off the street to do readings that really don't have any experience or read out of a book. They'll give you the answers out of a book. Well, things have changed. And I'm hoping it's for the good. I don't see any of that anymore. That was kind of, it's called bait and switch, and it's not allowed in the United States. I think there are probably places that still do it, but they're not in the United States because they would get in trouble for that. But anyways, that's enough about me and all the stuff. I'm going to bring on my beautiful guest. She has a very nice, gentle voice. She's written a new book. I have questions for her, and I want to welcome Cheryl Pallant. How are you, Cheryl? Is it Pallant or Pallant?
Okay. I say Pallant.
Pallant. Well, you know, either one or the other, right?
Yep, you got it.
I got it.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. Usually with my guests, and it's not really an interview, it's kind of like we talk, but I want to know, you know, you have so many things. You're an author, a poet, a dancer, a healer, a professor. How did this all begin? You started off, you were a literature student at Long Island University. Okay, from there,
yes.
How did you get to be a healer? How did this all progress for you? I like to get the beginning.
You got a couple hours?
Well, we have enough time. I can always add minutes in order to the show. Go ahead, just tell us. Yes,
well,
I want to know.
I'll say that back when I was entering high school, I had to get a physical exam, and the doctor discovered I had a scoliosis, so a curved spine, and said, okay, no gym, no movement for you. There's a chance you're going to have to be put in a cast, which is exactly what I did not want to hear. So I went through high school being very rigid with my posture. This doctor had also said pain would be with me for life, and sure enough, there was pain and more pain and more pain. But by the time I got to college, I just had this hunch, this need to be a little bit rebellious, and I took a movement improvisation class, and it just changed my world, and I watched the pain go down, eventually disappear. I watched my horizon, my spirits, everything just kind of blossomed. So I knew that I had to stick with movement, with dance in my life. And I found ways to do both writing, which is what I was interested in doing then, and dance. And then over the years, different people have said to me, oh, you know, you've got great healing ability. And I go, uh-huh, yeah, whatever. Nice sunset. Or, you know, I would be pretty dismissive until I was living in Korea. And then when I was living in Korea, I had arranged to do an interview, write an article about one of the leading Korean shamans. At the time, she was 79 years old. She was originally from North Korea. She had survived the war. And in the course of one of our conversations, she turned to me and said, well, you're a healer and you need to be pursuing this. And I could not dismiss her statement. It has this history. I mean, the culture has a history of shamanism, unlike basic American culture. And so it just stuck with me that I had to look into this. So once I got back into the U.S. and, you know, I was living in Korea for a year, I looked into this and found out about Reiki and went through Reiki training and found out about healing touch training and went through that. And then between that and all my other various somatic trainings or dabbling, I kind of hobbled together a practice and basically hung my shingle and have been surprised, because I always saw myself as a writer or teacher only, at how effective not only my hands-on, you know, when I see people within my own office, but also I do distant healing too, and how effective distant healing can be. So that's my abbreviated story of how it came about, and I'm probably as surprised as anybody else on how it all came together.
Wow. Well, you know, it's just like anything that we do. One thing leads us to another. Well, let's say this. The door will open. It's up to you to go through it if you want to do it. Nobody's going
right.
to come running at you and say, Cheryl, I'm shoving you through this door. Or Natalie, you're going to do this. I mean, it's kind of like your own if you want to do it or not. It's just
right.
like how I got started. But it's divine timing, I think. Yeah. And if you listen carefully, I always tell people, open the door of opportunity, kind of peek through it, walk in if you have to. You can always walk out and close the door behind you.
Right.
Because you don't know or how important this new thing would be for you. Now, you know, like for you, obviously, it's just, you know, I've talked with shamans on my show, not from Japan. It sounds to me like they're a whole different type. Is that right?
Well, this was Korea. The Korean shamans are, I mean, I can't say I know the Japanese shamans so well,
right.
But I would imagine that there is some overlap. But because they are kind of based in either Buddhism or Confucianism. So there is that Asian influence, and very different from, I think, most of the shamans in the U.S. are either Native American or South American based. So this is a whole different tradition.
It really, really is. Now, you actually went over there. You were there. Right?
Oh, yeah. I lived there for a year, and, I mean, I was teaching at a university there, but I ended up, because I was very interested in this Korean shaman, I ended up going to her center where, you know, various clients show up, and because I was going to be writing an article about her, and she knew that I danced, and I said, and if there's anything I can do to help out, and I was thinking, help out, you know, maybe I'll just kind of pour the rice in the bowls or help with some
simple.
Of the flowers,
yeah,
you know, something
right?
really basic, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what I ended up doing. At one point, and there's a whole, let's see, I think five different musicians that accompany various, primarily women, but also men who are dancing. And at one point in the ceremony, and the ceremony lasts for hours, she turned to me and said, please come up and dance. And I've learned that in Korea, you never say no.
Oh, and what an honor. Of course, then you were probably afraid, right? Were you scared? I mean, like, she wants me to do this?
I was surprised. And I assumed that others would be joining me because there was many group dancing. So to start, this woman came over, put on this white kind of robe on my body, and then everybody left, and it was just me. So it was me doing a solo. And, you know, fortunately, one, I'm a very good observer, and I had watched them doing their dances, so I knew about certain movements, and I'm also connected also to spirits. So I just danced away, and it probably lasted, 10, 15 minutes. I had a student with me. She ended up videotaping it.
Oh.
And so that was, I mean, that whole thing was pretty remarkable. So, yeah.
More than remarkable. It was amazing. And the lady that you are going to be writing about, she saw something with you. She really did. Or she would never have put you out there. Never.
Right.
Because there's so much honor to everything the cultures do. I mean, I know Chinese people. I know Japanese people. I don't have any Korean friends or even that write for the magazine. But I do know, and I can tell, just by when they write to me, how they are. It's just,
right.
I mean, you know, this is not some smalsy kind of bebop dance. This is culture at its finest. And
right.
So how did you feel when you got done? I mean, did you kind of take a sigh of relief and, oh, my God, I did it, or what?
Well, it was pretty invigorating because it's also pretty, I mean, I was jumping around, so it was kind of athletic. So there was that degree, but also wanting to honor the people that were present, wanting to honor, you know, the culture. I'm a guest. I mean, in their house and in their country.
Yeah.
And somehow included in this ceremony. And yes, so it felt very, in many ways, I mean, I was humbled by it.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, so it was a highlight of my time living there. So yeah, how wonderful. And dance for me, I mean, it's not just like let me move my body and make pretty or interesting gestures. Dance is a very embodied and spiritual activity.
Doesn't it tell a story also of some sort? I mean, you're relaying something, right?
It might relay a story, or it's pure expression, like, you know, maybe it's like a hiccup or maybe it's like an awe. And you are in communication. You're in communication with the many layers of your being. You're in communication with others that are in the room, and you're in communication with the earth. And, I mean, that's something that these Korean shamans are very aware of, and they would add in spirits of family, spirits of people who've been in the country as well, and they connect in with those spirits. You know?
Wow.
So moving and dancing, you know, in our cultures, just you put on music and you kind of get a little mindless. And for me and my devotion to embodiment, it's the reverse of that. It's a way to really connect into who you are authentically and do some serious growing or serious healing.
And this should lead us to your latest book, which is called, I don't want to kill this title here, Ecosomatics, Embodiment Practices for a World in Search of Healing. Is it called Ecosomatics? Is that how you pronounce it?
I say eco, like in ecology.
Okay.
So, yeah,
all right.
Ecosomatics.
Well, I didn't kill it too bad.
No, you did good.
Now, okay, so this book. Now, this is your latest book. This is not your first by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
I mean, you've done things, I see here 2006, 9, 12, 2017 another one, Writing and Body Emotion, 2018, and now this one. Now, I always ask my authors, you're my author, you know, was there a reason behind writing this book in particular?
Yes. I mean, there's always kind of an intuitive urge for my books, but this one took me by surprise because I was busy writing a book on poetry. I was pretty occupied already, and I got one of those very strong intuitive urges that basically said, you must do this other book. And I said to, you know, there's also kind of a voice attached to it, and I said, can't you see I'm busy? And it was kind of like, excuse me, but no, I see you're busy, but there's something very important here with this book.
Yeah, you like, say a remark, and I'm going to say, so I'm going to top it with a better one. Yes, yes. Awesome. I just love these. I love to hear about this because, you know, I've never written a book. I mean, I have a fairy tale story in my head, but it's a fairy tale of sorts. But to talk to people who have written so many books, one after the other, I mean, it's just, it boggles my mind. I mean, do you just sit down and devote so much time a day? How do you start your book? And then we're going to talk about what is in your book. Well, how do you start writing a book?
Yeah, so journaling, kind of like, oh, my gosh, here I go. And am I, one, willing to make the commitment? Because it takes, on the short end, a year. On the long end, it could take 10 years.
Yeah.
So am I willing to get involved in this relationship? And I say yes. So then I start journaling, and then I start shaping, and then I start expressing and shaping and editing. So it's an
ongoing process like that. How do you start journaling?
Like that.
Okay, say if you were going to give me some, or anybody, some little bit of advice, okay? Natalie, you have this idea, you have this story. How does one start to journal on something? I mean, and mine is a beautiful story, but how does one start? You just sit down and let the pen move, or you think, or how do you do it?
you think and you let the pen move, and sometimes you don't think. So I, sometimes I, and so sometimes, you know, to kind of lower the critic, because critics are very active, our inner critics, they pretend that you're writing a letter to a friend and you're saying, hey, hi, Natalie, this is Cheryl here. And, you know, I had this idea, I might spend some time this weekend writing, starting to write a book. I'm thinking about writing it on blah, blah, blah. And you start giving voice to it and you start shaping it. And really that's how it begins. But after that, you know, one is you can't wait for inspiration, because, you know, if that were the case, I'd be drinking a whole lot of coffee and a whole lot of cookies I'd be eating, because I'm inspired in that direction.
But you do have to make... No, I think everybody is, but I get you. I get you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so then you have to just kind of make a commitment, because you've already said, okay, we're going to be in relationship here. So the way that I work is that means 5 days a week I show up for a certain number of hours and make some sort of progress. So maybe it's writing, maybe it's researching, but
okay.
I show up.
I have another question
myself available.
About this.
Yeah.
Is, okay, so you show up, you sit at the desk or wherever you usually do your journaling, outside or wherever, whatever is good and comfy for you. And you don't, I'm assuming you don't really have expectations. You just kind of let things flow. I mean, because you could wander with your story a little bit too, you know, if you, I mean, that's a commitment to me. That's, I just, that's why I love talking to authors, because that is such a commitment to sit, like for you, for 5 days, for how many hours a day, whatever you choose, to, you know, isolate yourself and not think about the things around you, not think about food, or where you're going to go tomorrow, or what's the weekend. I mean, you cannot allow yourself. You have to be in the moment. Is that hard to do?
It can be very hard to do, because we are thinking about all those things that you mentioned. And then we're also thinking about, gosh, is this even worth my time? So that's why I say it's got to be a commitment. What are you willing to do this? And what are your expectations? And when I say expectations, maybe it's like I'm just going to write a 10-page pamphlet. Great. Maybe I'm going to write a novel. Okay, great. But have realistic expectations along with that. I mean, I do, I work as a coach with some people and help them with writing their books or writing articles. And everybody's got their own challenges. Some because they're a parent and they've got kids in the house. So sometimes... Right? So sometimes, you get up at 4 or 5 in the morning before the rest of the house.
And there's monetary problems, and there's all kinds of challenges. I can think of a lot of them to commit to that. Right, yeah.
Right, right. So, but the other thing is to be kind with yourself, and being kind can show up in so many different ways. So maybe that means that you go to sleep a little earlier, or maybe that means you only spend an hour on this and you give yourself not a year to do this, but you give yourself 5 years.
Right.
That would be kindness, because we do have limitations with our lives. We have lots of obligations. So that kindness and looking for ways to be kind and looking for ways to encourage your creative expression to take place. Really important. And surround yourself
and you
with
don't gauge it to a specific age group. You just put it out there and just let it go. Right? See, my book, because it's a fairy tale, I thought about gauging it towards the younger crowd, but it won't be for the younger. It can be for older people, because it's a very spiritual story. And I believe in it so much. And because of my faith, I believe it could happen in anyone's life. And so I guess you just, there is no, I mean, and you know, I'm in touch with so many publicists, so many publishing houses. I mean, I've got it right in my palm. What I would need is just to do it, put it out there. Who wants it? But you know, it's the commitment to write. You have to kind of say, okay, I'm allowing my morning, and I sit outside all the time. I'm in a great place to watch. You know, I have ducks that come, and I feed them and their babies. And it's just a beautiful environment. I could sit out there and write because I have no distractions. I turn my phone down because I love to hear the birds. I got so many of them coming. It's like, you know, I'm not Mary Poppins, and I don't know what I am, but they gravitate to me because I guess they feel the love, and I do love them. I could probably, that would be perfect for me. And I'm in a place, I'm in South Carolina, I could do this 12 months out of the year if need be. I might have to wear a coat in December, but I could still sit outside because there's no snow, and it's not freezing. You know, or I can sit in the sun that's right in amongst my trees, and the sun comes in, it will be nice and warm there. So I have the environment. It's just a matter, but I like what you said. You have to just get a commitment and say, okay, I'm going to do this, but don't overextend yourself, I'm thinking. You know, can you start off slow? Like, okay, I'm going to do 30 minutes. Let me see what I can come up with. Let me see what I can write down, even if it doesn't make sense, right?
Right. Exactly, because the beauty of writing means you can edit, you can delete.
Yeah, you sure can.
Yeah,
no matter what means of writing you're using. It could be your computer, it could be Outlook, it could be pencil. You can always erase it or cross it out.
Exactly.
No, I don't like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not a permanent kind of thing. Okay, so let's talk about your newest book, Ecosomatics, Embodiment Practices for a World in Search of Healing. Now, healing is very important to me because I was almost died twice, and I had a vision. Something came to me. There was nothing anybody could do. So I am a firm believer in what you wrote about, totally. Sometimes, you know, Cheryl, and people should understand this, everybody's life isn't perfect. I mean, even yours and mine. Okay, you have things that happen. We were just talking about being hit by lightning on my house, okay? But things happen. You take care of them one at a time, and then all of a sudden it's all done. Yeah, you might have some lingering things that are issues, okay? But do it and then step forward and continue on. But I think people tend to overthink when they do things, but what are embodiment practices? What do you mean by that title? And I love your book.
Yeah.
I love the colors.
Oh, thank you.
I love that beautiful butterfly that's there. It's so soft. And covers are good for me. If you listen to my shows, I always talk about covers on books. People say, oh, well, I'll do a PDF. No, I'm not into PDFs. I have to hold the book and look at the cover. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people don't care. I get people to send PDFs. I send them off to my girl. She does reviews on them. I have to have the book. So what does it mean, embodiment practices?
Yeah. So let me just do a step back and say what ecosomatics is.
Yes,
somatics is a practice, and there's a whole range of practices that is related to your personal experience of your own body. So rather than looking at a book and looking at a picture, let's say, of your foot, a foot, that could be anybody's foot, which is objective information, you are experiencing your own foot. And it may be with your eyes, but more than half the time, it's kind of with your imagination. It's with your inner sense. So it's somatics is your inner sensing of your body. And I've tied that in with, so the eco part is ecology. And my premise is that, one, we don't have a very good relationship with our body. And when you start getting a relationship with your body, you recognize that your body is also connected to the earth. And guess what? We don't have a great relationship with the earth right now.
No,
so
you're right.
Part of what was kind of urging me to write this book is I was aware of what was going on with the climate, and that my understanding is that the more that we heal self, that lends itself by extension to healing Earth. Or you can go the other direction. The more that we can heal Earth, the healthier we are. So, I mean, just look at something as basic as there's a fire in Canada with all the smoke, and then even if we're 600 or 1,000 miles away, we might be inhaling it. And that's impacting our so many other areas where it's even less visible than that. So, you know, to get back to the more kind we can be with ourselves, or the more patient we can be with ourselves, or the better listeners we can be with ourselves, that lends itself to embodiment. So many of us are pretty disconnected to our body. We know when we're hungry, we know when we're tired, but do we stick with tiredness? Do you go to sleep when you need to go to sleep, or do you push past your limits?
Right.
And most of us push past the limits.
Exactly. Oh,
and
yes.
So,
yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what happens with the body is like, okay, we'll let you go this time. Okay, you're doing it again? We'll let you go this time too. But when you get to like number four, it's like, you know what? You're starting to get worn down. And next thing you know, you've got a big nasty cold or something worse, and you're slammed into bed because maybe you need to
rest. We're going
to
make
really
you rest. Yes.
Right. And so, you know, so our lack of having this relationship with ourselves leads to all sorts of complications in our sense of well-being, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So the more in touch we can be with our body, a friendship relationship, the more we're going to just feel so much more healthy, but also connected to yourself, connected to family, connected to friends, connected to, you know, your community, and connected to the earth. So it ends up being a win-win all the way through. Not always easy to do. So, you know, something as simple as just take this moment right now, enjoy a bit of silence, feel your breath. So you're aware that your breath is moving right at your lungs. Where else in your body do you notice some motion?
It's true. You know,
right? So
yes,
just
yeah,
in that
yeah.
One
no,
little...
all of it means something because, to me especially, and I always, when I have guests on, it's almost like I resonate with them because I've had such feelings. Yesterday, I was so angry all day, and I just let the anger out, not to people. I was just angry for things that have happened. And then, you know, I have a cat. He's a big cat. When I get like that, he hazes me. He'll come real close and walks every place I go, and I'll think, his name is Muji. Muji, will you back off? I mean, I'm almost stumbling over him. It's almost like he knows, Mom, get a grip. It's okay.
Right.
And, yeah, so, okay, so then that happened. But, you know, I find myself, you're talking about sleep. I only have one television now, and it's in the living room. Well, it used to be I could watch a little bit of TV, my movies or whatever, just before I went to sleep. I love that. Well, I don't have a second TV right now. So I'm finding myself out in the living room with my cat, falling asleep probably when I should be asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have busy days, a lot of mental stuff, and then I'll wake up and I'll think to myself, well, that was really dumb. Why didn't she just shut the TV off and go to sleep? So, but you know, it's changing what you're used to doing. And but then when I do wake up, Cheryl, it's like I'm drugged because I'm so sound asleep for that time when I really should be sleeping in bed for the remainder of the night, and I'm not. I wake myself up. So I'm going to try to change that because I don't think it's healthy.
Yeah.
You know
so
what I'm saying?
You said how much you love sitting on your porch in the morning.
Yes, I do.
Well, what about as part of your evening activity, preparing for bed, just go out into the porch, sit for a few minutes, kind of check in with, you know, the fireflies or the
or
fox
the birds
that you imagine
and,
is, you know,
yep,
right?
Exactly. And,
the
you know,
wind,
my deer come at dusk. I have deer that come at dusk and I feed them. I'm just such an activist for animals. And so anyways, I'll walk out on the porch, and this is probably a good time I should do this. I've never done it.
Yeah.
Is I could sit out there, and they just sit there and watch me. They wait.
Right.
It's
and
almost
then you
like
can
they're
also
saying,
say,
yeah, Mom,
yeah,
Mom,
saying,
Mom's here. Come on, everybody, let's go. She's here. She's going to bring out three
here.
Big bowls of food. Yep, yep.
And then you can also be saying, goodbye, owls. Good night, owls, fireflies, good night, stars. Good night, you know, you can go through the whole list.
Right.
And then receive what they're saying back to you, which is, you know, their own form of have a good night, sleep well.
Right.
And just the gentleness of that exchange and the natural rhythms of nature so that when you then get into bed, you're in a much quieter place.
That's what
and
I should do. I will try that tonight because the deer, I'll poke my head out and there they are. They're, you know, I have little ones, not fawns, but I have smaller ones and bigger ones. And as the season goes, as we go into the year, I'll have the males with the big antlers.
Mm.
Not nasty at all. Because, you see, I think I've been doing this for several years, and I think they're coming back. Some of the same ones, and I'm very careful with them, and I talk to them. You know, I do. I'll go out, and I'll put three big bowls of stuff, all kinds of good stuff for them, not just corn. You don't feed deer corn. You have to do other things. But they're coming closer and closer to me, but I'm very careful because I could get a stampede of them at me. Just because. But I really don't see that in their eyes. I see, okay, we got to back up everybody. It's like there's a leader. He or she, it's a she, mostly girls, back up, and then I put it all out, and then I gently back away. No abrupt movements at all. And I'll look at them, and I'll say, now, be careful. Don't go in the road and go back into the woods from where you came. Because there's danger in the road. They know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? But I've done this for 2 years. I've talked to them.
Yeah.
And so they are so calming. There's probably 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
All different sizes. A lot of them. And it's just, you know, and when I talk to God every day, I'll say, this is the highlight of my evening is going out and seeing them waiting for me. As soon as the light's on, they're there. They know.
Right.
And I go out, and I talk to them a little bit, and I'll say, I'll be right back. And then I go in, and I put all their stuff in their bowls, and I bring it out.
Great.
Probably that would
Lovely.
Be, you're probably right. I should do that.
Yeah.
And I can sit out there while they're eating. They don't care. I mean, they trust me. I mean, they know I'm not going to, you know. So it's a very trusting kind of thing for me.
Right.
And I'm going to try that tonight because they'll be back tonight.
Right. Right.
You know,
And it's something like that that makes you feel really connected to where you are.
Oh,
and So, you know, a lot of us can be feeling lonely and isolated, but when you do something like what you do, you're like, no, I belong in this community. We're all in this together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I don't have a significant other. I have a son and a daughter-in-law and a granddaughter, but I don't, I mean, my son is very attentive when he can, but he's got a family. You know, he doesn't live that, they don't live that far from me, but I'm really alone. And, you know, I think to myself, you know, but I'm not really alone. I have the animal kingdom with me. I really do. I have cardinals, male and female. I have bluebirds. I have blue jays. I have woodpeckers. I have them all that they come on my property. Nobody else, but on mine. And, you know, a man that writes for my magazine, he told me, he said, you know why they do that? And I wrote him back. I said, no, well, I said, I got an idea. I said, I feed them. He said, no, because they know you love them. They know what you are, the gentlest of souls. They know. So, you know, every day, you know, like this morning, my ducks have disappeared with the babies, but we had two gators in my lagoon, and I think they're being very cautious. I don't think they're, you know, they're in the water, but they're very cautious. And I haven't seen them, but it's a little disappointing to me because sometimes they used to come three or four times a day, but I see them and I'll kind of talk to them and say, I know what you're doing. It's good. You're safe. I'm happy, you know, because I have food for them. And I just sit out there. I'm outside in the morning between 7 and 7:30, Cheryl, and I can sit out there. Matter of fact, I stayed out there until about 45 minutes before the show. I stayed out there because I'm the most connected there. People, I have issues with people sometimes. I have nothing, no problems with the animal kingdom that I have. And I think to myself sometimes, and you're going to say something about this, sometimes I wonder why I'm here. I'm very healthy. I'm older. All of my friends have since passed. I mean, and I'm doing really good work. Very spiritual work of the highest. But when I'm out there, I think to myself, okay, I know why. I'm looking at it. I'm listening to it. And, you know, nobody else takes care of them like I do out off of my porch. And I think to myself, you probably should have been raised on a farm. My dad always told me that because I love animals. I love cows and pigs and rhinos and everything. That's what I follow mostly because I love them. So I guess in a way this is my gift to the animal kingdom is what I do. You know, and I sometimes it gives you perspective, doesn't it, when you look at it that way. And I really should do things more that make me feel good inside. I mean, it's just unusual. You have to know, and you know. You have to be that kind of a person. Okay, so now back to your book. Okay, so do you go, how does the book begin?
Well, I talk about I talk about why, in many ways, what my reason for writing this book was, and it was my concern about the climate crisis, and that I've been witnessing heartbreaking. I mean, you love your animals, I do too, and watching one animal, one species after another, go extinct. And
right,
it's like,
right.
Oh my gosh, this is heartbreaking.
Right.
And right, and then it's not just, you know, the whole greater animal kingdom; it's also people are suffering. So people are. And look what's happening right now with extreme heat or extreme floods. And people are losing their livelihoods. They're losing family members. They're getting injured. And so all of that kind of suffering is, to me, very heartbreaking.
It is.
So I write about that and say, this is what has compelled me to write this book. And partly ask the question, like, well, what can I do? What can any of us do to kind of make the world more habitable for everybody? So do a small action or a big action? So my action, at least when I was writing the book, is to write the book and to get us to be aware of self. And to be aware of, well, where are the places that you're hurting? Where are the places that you feel contracted? And those are great places to kind of nurse back to health. start there. Or maybe start with a plot of land that is just kind of going, it's not doing anything, it's not growing anything, maybe the soil's been depleted, and find out, well, what does the soil need to start growing something again, whether it's grass or strawberries or hay. So what does the soil need? So to start making small actions that show that we're taking care of ourselves, so we're establishing that relationship or making that relationship better, and then doing the same with the environment. When I say the environment, the natural world, and that there's nature, we are nature, and there's nature outside of us as well. So find some areas and go small. So, you know, you say, well, you're having difficulty sleeping. All right, there you go. Let's work on that. We don't know the reasons, but maybe we can just kind of tweak it a little. So just what we talked about. So maybe just sitting outside at night, talking to, you know, your family of nature, as you, you know, could call them, and feeling the peace that comes into your body as a result of that communion that you are experiencing. So you're sitting out there. It's not the TV with its loud noises, commercials, the rhythms that are not natural rhythms. You're getting back into nature's rhythms, which are kind of in sync with our own rhythms. So we're kind of finding an agreement in some ways, or finding some harmony with nature, which is like a great way. It's almost like a little lullaby that helps you get to sleep.
Yeah, it does something to you, body and soul, because it's, I notice, and I don't usually sit out with them because I don't want to disturb them. But I mean, I know I can get them really close. I can put the food on the porch and they come on the porch because I do it when it's raining. Isn't that ridiculous? I mean, I have been out with my ducks and their babies in the rain, making sure they have enough food to eat. And my son will come, Mom, they're used to being in the rain, in the water. No, I said, I want to make sure. I hover. I'm really good at doing that. And, you know, like at night, I do it at night with the deer. They don't come during the day, and I'm glad, because I don't want my neighbors to get upset that I'm feeding the deer. So it's a way of protecting them. It's private property. They can't really stop me. But what I'm doing for them is allowing them to have their plants outside and their flowers, and the deer are not going there and eating them because they're coming to my house. you know, so I'm really careful with them. Lately, though, because we had two alligators, I'll turn on my corner light to make sure. But I also said to my son, you know, I don't think they would show up if there was an alligator walking around my house. I'm pretty sure they would run. And they wouldn't be there when I go to look out. I wouldn't see them. And I'm very careful now, and I didn't have to be, but now that I know that they come to the lagoon here, and it's a man-made lagoon. I don't live in this posh neighborhood. It's just a lagoon, and many of us have them, and it backs up to my house. So I'm really careful now, although I watch, you know, and I'll see if where they are, and because, you know, they can come on your porch in a heartbeat. They don't say, is it okay if I get on your porch? They just come on your porch.
Right.
So I have to also be careful, but I'm also careful with them. And it's like I'm the keeper. It's really, it's a nice feeling. It really, really is, you know. I love it. You know, I have, okay, there's a question here. And this was put in by the gal who does my reviews, because she looks at your book. She looks at all the books of all my authors. What is sensory listening, and why is it so important?
Yeah. So sensory listening means like attending to what's going on with your senses. So seeing in this moment, Mm-hmm. What are you touching in this moment? What are you hearing? So going through all the senses, then also, well, what are you having any memories at this in this moment? Well, what are you thinking about in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
And why that's all important is because it gets you rooted in the present moment. And when you're in the present moment, what happens is a sense of ease can come in. Because too often we're thinking about tomorrow or next week or next year, or we're thinking about what happened a year ago or however long ago, and we're not even noticing what is right around us. And when we start being in touch with what's around us, then that puts us in touch with gratitude. Wow, yeah, you know, I'm noticing the shape of the leaves right now. Wow, they're quite remarkable in that poplar tree. Look at that shape. And oh, I'm feeling a little heat on my back of my neck. I wonder what that's about. So even just getting curious about sensations of your body. So what's so important is because when we step, that's what creates a good relationship with yourself. It's like having that perfect friend who comes over and says, Natalie, how are you doing? And what they do is not only listen to what you are saying, they notice how you're moving about. They kind of between your words. And so there's a depth of listening that makes you feel like, wow, you recognize that this person is listening so well. There's a sense of deep trust and deep connection. And then I'd even say a type of love, right? Except this friend that I've said is outside you is also what you're aiming to establish within. So you become your own best friend. You become your best listener. You become the ideal nurse to your woes. So you become really available to yourself so that you then not only have a deeper sense of peace with yourself, but also you end up sharing it with other people. You get to share it. And you might, sometimes you're sharing it very pretty obviously, like you say, hi, yeah, can I help you? But sometimes even just something as simple as walking down the street, people pick up on your peace and they just feel better. In the same way that you said early in our conversation, oh, she's just got such a soothing voice. So already just from the quality of my voice, it wasn't like I even said very much. You were picking up on kind of my relationship with myself. I wasn't telling you what to do. All I was doing was just saying, oh, hi, Natalie, how are you? And that was enough to kind of reset you and just feel a little bit more peace in yourself. Am I putting words in your mouth, or would you say that was accurate?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So, like, you accepted to come on my show. So, to me, that's mm-hmm. divine timing, divine order. Maybe mm-hmm. it was going to be really good for me. Maybe it was good for you. But my listeners are going to see, they're going to hear, not see, but they're going to hear the great conversation between the two of us. And I so, so would love to have you on the show again. And oh. I would love to put something in the next issue. Oh, she's going to shut us off. I will email you about that. And I want to let everybody know, as I always end the show, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Thank you, Cheryl. Again, you have an awesome day, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.